Jimmy Hyams, how are you?
John, I'm doing fantastic. I am stimulated. Yeah. Over at Oak Ridge Nissan, they got these the new 2021 Altima starting at $17,488, the new 2018 Rogues, $17,388, and the new Sentras at $14,488. Great deals here. Zero financing for up to 84 months. How about that?
That is incredible. And we have a lot in store for our listeners today. We always enjoy Fridays when we get to catch up with our good friend Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com. That'll be a little bit later this hour. We will continue our hoops conversation with Al Brown as he'll join us to start hour number two of the show. We have comments from, as I was able to catch up with, Chris Burke. He's going to be on the call tonight for Tennessee Vanderbilt as well as tomorrow. And so we talk a lot about how big this series is. We'll have a preview of Tennessee and Vanderbilt, courtesy of the Tennessee head coach, Tony Vitello, and Jimmy Hyams. We will have a Tennessee football practice report. We'll have comments from coaches and players within the program, and it wouldn't officially be Friday until we said hello to Steve Hamer, would it?
No, absolutely. We look forward to Steve Hamer. Is there not a lot to talk about with basketball? My goodness.
You're not kidding. Big news for the Big Orange. As I guess, does this count as three straight days with a big man saying he's going to play for Tennessee?
Why not? Looks that way to me. But, yeah, that's great news for Tennessee that John Fulkerson is back in the fold. John, I wrote a blog about it, and this is my opinion, but certainly I think, in reading through the message he sent out to Tennessee fans through his video, where he indicated that the freshman John Fulkerson would ask the older Fulkerson, is this the way you want to go out? And the answer to that, it really is no, because he didn't even remember playing in his last game. That was against Florida when he took a couple of elbows from Omar Payne and suffered a concussion. So you don't want to end your career that way, and that's understandable. And then the other part of that is I think that he was really hoping that Tennessee could give him some help inside. I think that was kind of in the back of his mind. And when Tennessee delivered with a 7-foot center, Jonas Adu, with a 6'9", top-rated power forward in Brandon Huntley Hatfield, I think that Fulkerson look and say, you know what, I don't have to be the focal point of the defense. I'm not the only guy that's going to be able to score inside. This is really looking good. And I think he wants to leave his Tennessee career on a higher note than he left it. So I think those were factors that led to him returning. Even if I'm wrong, it doesn't matter. He's coming back, right? So that's the great news for Tennessee. In addition to the transfer portal with Justin Powell, this recruiting class has been elevated all the way, not just number two in the SEC, which it was before. They're number two in the nation. They're now number one in the SEC. The only team in the country with a better class is Michigan, which has 2 5-stars and 3 4-stars. So very impressive work that Rick Barnes and his staff have done in reshaping this roster.
I don't think there's any question that it will be something to watch, and then if everything keeps moving in the right direction and things are pointing in the right direction, then you get a lot more work in the off season to build up to this season than, unfortunately, Jimmy, than what teams got last year.
Well, and you're right, what teams got, but I'll say this. I think that Rick Barnes and his staff do a really good job in player development, and I think that lack of the ability in player development might have hurt Tennessee, perhaps more than others. We've already mentioned, as I've been told, all but two scholarship players on the team contracted COVID at some point. So they got hit harder than some teams. There were a lot of teams that got hit hard as well, no doubt. But I think the lack of that player development that the staff was robbed of because of COVID might have had an impact on the development of Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson early in their careers. And so, but that should not be a factor this time around. So really looking forward to seeing what Tennessee is going to do in men's basketball. I'm also looking forward to seeing what Tennessee is going to do in baseball. John, what a great series they've got this weekend.
Yeah, 7 o'clock the first pitch tonight, 4 o'clock tomorrow, and then 1 o'clock on Sunday. And as my conversation earlier with Chris Burke, I don't think that there's been a bigger regular season series at this ballpark. In fact, I think it's the biggest baseball weekend at this ballpark since the 1995 regional, the Mideast regional, in which Tennessee beat Oklahoma State to punch its ticket to the College World Series. So it is the marquee matchup in all of college baseball. And as Chris said, and we'll bring you those comments later in the show, he said these will be games that they'll be watching in Major League clubhouses.
How about that? Well, the shame of it is they won't be able to pack 5,000 into the stadium.
True.
What is it? Is it 1,400 or so? What's that number, John?
It's right in that range. There were a few extra tickets that were made available earlier this week, and there are going to be some. I mean, you've got people that are already lined up outside the stadium just waiting for that opportunity to get in. But all available tickets have been sold, and it really is a shame that you don't have the opportunity to pack the park, because I think you could probably pack it up to maybe – five figures, if indeed the seating were that were possible.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, somebody at Tennessee is going to always shoot me for this comment, but I'm hoping that they print some counterfeit tickets. That's when you know you've arrived. When people are so desperate to get into a game, they print fake tickets. So if that happens, you know it's a big event, right?
Well, that's true, but of course, nowadays it's digital, so that's a little bit more difficult. But yes, your point is well made. Your point is well made. That's when you know you've arrived, or when people are resorting to subterfuge to try and get through the gate.
Vince is the first one that brought this up to me, but he asked me, he said, when's the last time there were top three teams facing off in any sport at Tennessee? My first thought was Tennessee against Florida in football in 96. Well, Tennessee was number two. Florida was number four in both AP and coaches poll. But then thanks to the handiwork of Eric Traynor, we find that women's basketball has had 16 such contests of two teams in the top three facing each other. Many of those games were against Connecticut, and the Lady Vols were 11-5 in those games. But so it's happened 16 times in women's basketball, and the only other sport in which top three teams have faced off in Knoxville, Tennessee Vanderbilt, with that series starting tonight. That's pretty high cotton.
Yeah, it really is. And the only other event that I think would have compared, Jimmy, would be Big John Tate, Mike Weaver, and a heavyweight championship fight at Stokely Athletic Center.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That preceded me getting it. That was in the early 80s, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. But I do remember that. I remember all the hubbub about all that. So, anyway, let's jump to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. We've already touched on a number of things already. We'll go to the WNBA draft. Anaya Davis, the Lady Vol, the number 9 pick. That was lower than many projected. A lot of them. Folks had her going number 4 to the Indiana Fever, but she goes to the Minnesota Lynx, which have been a very successful franchise in the WNBA. And so this is the eighth time that at least four SEC players were taken in the first round of the 25-year-old WNBA draft, and it's the sixth time that at least 9 SEC players have been taken. The only time a first-round selection from the SEC didn't occur in the WNBA draft was 2014. So, Renia Davis starting her career with the Lynx, I think that's a really good spot for her. Tennessee gets a preferred walk-on commit. They get a Clarksville offensive lineman, Nicholas Edwards. He's recovering from ACL surgery. He's 6'6", he's 300 pounds. He played the last 7 games of last season with a torn ACL. He didn't even know he had it. But anyway, he is going to join the team as a preferred walk-on. A couple other basketball notes. Alabama guard Jaden Shackelford is entering the NBA draft. He is not hiring an agent. He led Alabama in scoring at 14 points per game. And he could do the same thing that John Petty and Herbert Jones did. They tested the NBA waters last year, returned, and then Alabama had a great year. But Shackelford has entered the draft with the potential to return. Also, a couple of other notes. As far as basketball, Evan Mobley with USC is declared for the NBA draft. Not a surprise there. And I looked at Florida's transfer list. They've got 4 guys transferring in. Their scoring averages are 15.3 points at their previous school, 17.2, 20.1, and 9.7. That's pretty good production from Florida in terms of players coming in. This is a note. I don't know whether to feel sorry for him or to say you have to be smarter than this. Christian Coleman, one of the favorites in the 100 and 200 in the Olympics, is going to miss the Tokyo Games. He appealed a 2-year ban because he missed repeated doping tests. Now, and I'm like, well, why are you missing them? What happened? What? I don't know all the details of that. So, again, I don't know whether to feel sorry for him or feel like you screwed up because you weren't responsible enough, because I don't know the details. But anyway, he's banned from the Olympics, and he got a two-year ban. He got it reduced to 18 months, but that's not going to help him for Tokyo. His ban actually expires in November because he had been suspended a little while back. All right, just a couple of other notes down at the MCI Heritage. I thought this was an interesting note. So Cameron Smith was fishing before the golf tournament at Hilton Head at Harbor Link, Hardtown Links. And you're not supposed to do that, apparently, in these areas. So he got escorted off of the premises because he was fishing. Turned around and shot a 62. He's the first-round leader at the MCI Heritage down in Hilton Head with that 62. I thought that was an interesting story. LSU has parted ways with Nikki Caldwell-Fargus. She had been there for 10 years and had not achieved to the level that they had hoped. Her record in SEC play was only 81-77. 176, 128 overall, never finished better than fourth in the SEC in the regular season. She missed the NCAA tournament four times out of 10 years and made the Sweet 16 twice. Florida's got a commit from an offensive lineman. Get a load of this story. Jaheim Otis, he is from Columbia, Mississippi. Alabama offered him when he was an eighth grader, 6'4", 286 pounds, and claimed to have run, and they showed video of this, although the timing is questionable, he claimed to have run a 4'7 at age 14 at 6'4", 286 pounds. Well, he's still 6'4", but now he weighs 350. He is an Alabama commit, as the rich seem to get richer in that situation. All right, and then Southern Cal has avoided NCAA tournament postseason ban. So here's the story on that. They got 2 years probation. They had an assistant coach, Tony Bland, who was said to have accepted over $13,000 in bribes to push players to business managers and financial advisors. Now, he was arrested 3 years and 7 months ago. USC gets probation. They get fined $5,000. They get fined 1% of the men's basketball budget. USC had previously self-imposed recruiting restrictions and two scholarship reductions. Bland was sentenced to 100 hours of community service and 2 years probation. He pleaded guilty to accepting 4,100 in bribes, not 13,000 in bribes. He also got a three-year show cause. This is the fourth program, USC, to be penalized by the NCAA over this FBI wiretapping situation. In February, South Carolina, 2 years probation. In June, Oklahoma State, 3 years probation and a one-year tournament ban. They appealed that ban, so they went ahead and played in the tournament this year. We'll see about next year. Alabama, in November, got 3 years probation and a 10-year show cause for an associate athletic director and notice of allegations to Arizona, Kansas, Louisville, NC State, TCU, and then they acknowledged it. Auburn and Creighton have not acknowledged it, and LSU's under investigation. So that covers all of those particular schools that had been targets of that FBI probe that we had talked about. Eli Manning returning to the New York Giants role is still unclear as to what he is going to do. And in the SEC Women's Golf Championships, Lady Vols shot 3 under in day two. It sounds good until you see what everybody else is shooting at Greystone down in Birmingham. That only puts them tied for ninth. They're 5 under par after two rounds are tied for ninth because so many other teams are shooting low scores. For example, the leading score as a team after 2 days is LSU at 28 under par. Michaela Williams Luck shot a 68, so she's 5 under for the tournament, tied for 16. I think we'll get those results on whether or not Tennessee advanced to match play, but the format is, I think you got to be in the top eight to advance to match play, and they're tied for ninth. There were two shots out of the ability to advance in match play. So we'll see what happens with that situation. And also Duke gets a transfer from Marquette, Theo John, who has the second most block shots in Marquette history. And then Caesars, they've come out with their NFL win projections. Kansas City, the leader at 12, Tampa Bay 11.5, Baltimore and Green Bay at 11. And, of course, that's with an extra game being played. That's with a 17-game schedule. And those are news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
So, Jimmy, when you were talking about hoops and those that have acknowledged and those that have yet to acknowledge, would you hold your breath for acknowledgement in Baton Rouge? And if they do acknowledge, would it be a strong acknowledgement?
It should It should be a strong A acknowledgement. The crazy thing is they're under investigation, so I don't know why they don't just acknowledge that they've got a notice of allegations, but they are being investigated.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But it's crazy, all that shenanigans that are going on in Baton Rouge. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Will Wade still has a job.
He does. That he does. Sean Miller does not.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, he didn't win enough ball games.
That's true. And who'd ever thought that would be what would trip him up?
Yeah, really. You thought he'd paid enough to get better players than that.
But that's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. The show today is at Oak Ridge Nissan, where, again, it is the stimulus sale that's going on now. And, Jimmy, you, of course, live in a very, very beautiful part of town right there on the water. How long did it take you to get to Oak Ridge?
10 minutes.
Wow.
10 minutes. And you know what?
What?
I'm on, just on gas, I'm saving thousands of dollars
that's
to
right.
be here.
You
but,
sure are.
We're located in Oak Ridge. A couple of great deals on the Altima Rogue Sentra. Thanks to note, no payments until October of 2021. 0% financing for 84 months. You get up to $8,000 over Kelley Blue Book for your trade-in for that sled, whether it rides or not. Unbelievable deals at Oak Ridge Nissan. Stimulus package going on right now.
Right where the turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes.
And just to recap the incredible last few days for Tennessee basketball, so we talked about John Fulkerson. Now, granted, when you look at these ratings, you get different people with different results on this, but Tennessee in men's basketball, they've got what has been rated by at least one service, the number two point guard in the country, Kennedy Chandler, the number one power forward, Brandon Huntley Hatfield, the number six center, Jonas Adu, the number 10 small forward, Jamal Meshack, the number 21 player in the transfer portal, Justin Powell, and then Quentin Dabanje, the 6'6 wing from Montverde in Florida. He has now been rated a three-star, the number 68 shooting guard, the number 26 player in the state of Florida, number 292 overall. So that's not a very good rating, but he is said to have a lot of upside, a lot of potential. So that's a look at the Tennessee recruiting class that, again, is ranked number two in the nation behind only Michigan. Also, a couple of, let's see, a note on the NBA. Steph Curry's averaged 38.9 points in his last eight games. That's the most over an eight-game stretch for any player 33 years or older. He's hit 11 threes a couple times during that stretch. The NFL draft. So Trey Lance with North Dakota State looks like he's going to be drafted easily within the top 10 picks. These are players that have from non-power five that have been taken in the first round of the NFL draft. I don't know if this is like the last 20 years. I think it might be. Blake Bortles, Carson Wentz, Paxton Lynch, Josh Allen, Jordan Love. Now, those are the non-power five quarterbacks taken in the first round. To my way of thinking, looking at it right now, John, the only one that I would say, yep, that was a good pick, was Josh Allen. Carson Wentz has had his moments, but he has struggled of late. So if he doesn't turn it around, I think you would say that was not successful. Blake Bortles had a moment with Jacksonville, and now he has not done well. Paxton Lynch, certainly he never did do there very well. And then you got Jordan Love, who hadn't played at Green Bay. But that's a look at the at those players that were taken from non-Power 5 schools in recent years in the first round of the NFL draft. And there, I meant to tell this story the other day, but I thought it was too good. I think I've got time to sneak it in here. So Nick Saban was talking to a group about trying to date his wife, Miss Terry. And he said that when he was in high school, he couldn't get a date with her. They went to different schools. And she was dating this guy named Mickey Schaefer, who came from a little bit more well-to-do place than Nick Saban did. Saban's dad ran a gas station, and Nick Saban worked there. So she said for a long time, she wouldn't go out with him. Finally, she got a date with him. And then they eventually, of course, they get married. And so they had a reunion, and they drove back to their hometown. And he decides, by golly, he's going to drive by a gas station because now Mickey Schaefer is the owner of a gas station. So he drives by the gas station, and he says to Miss Terry, you know what? If you'd have married Mickey Schaefer, you would be the wife of a guy that owns a gas station. She said, that's a bunch of bull. If I'd have married him, he'd be the head coach at Alabama now. That's pretty good.
Yes.
Now, who knows if it's true? But that, I thought that was a really good story when I heard Saban tell it. So I wanted to share that. I just thought that was a little bit of humble pie thrown at Saban's way by Miss Terry.
That is wonderful. Oh, man. The program today is at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue.
You've got great savings, and we'll tell you more about that throughout the course of today's program. We're with you until 6:45 when we step aside for Tennessee baseball against Vanderbilt. But it's always a pleasure when we get to head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline to say hello to Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com as he joins us now. Jesse, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you guys today?
Doing quite well. And tell me, just from your perspective, the fact that you've seen a number of area players play for both Tennessee and Vanderbilt baseball, and you have a number of area players that are either being courted by or have pledged, committed to, and signed with Tennessee and Vanderbilt to play in the future, what is it like to see this matchup this weekend be number 3 Tennessee against number 2 Vanderbilt?
Well, I think for a lot of people here in Knoxville, including myself, it's cool to see Tennessee competitive again. And it's from a recruiting standpoint, you're seeing them make more of a headway in terms of getting in earlier with big-time prospects that might be incoming freshmen or rising sophomores. So they're doing a really good job of getting in the recruitment process early, identifying talent earlier, and even offering earlier. You know, we got 3 or 4 kids who are just freshmen this year in high school that are already committed to Tennessee. And so it's a different ball game in terms of recruiting nowadays with, again, offering 8th graders and 9th graders, kind of following the lead of college football. But you're hearing and you're seeing Tennessee more and more often with the top flight players, and I think that's starting to show off in the players they're bringing on campus and how they're in this spotlight for this weekend against Vanderbilt.
What do you think in terms of having a college decision made? No, there's so much that can happen when you are that young and you say, this is where I'm going to go, but it could also pay off big time for both the program to know that they're getting an outstanding athlete, as well as the athlete to know that's taken care of. But what is it like when you see somebody who has 2, 3, or even potentially more years of high school left before they head on to college, yet they've already made or announced a choice?
It's different. We've all had to adjust to it, not only high school coaches, but we in the media. And I constantly have to remind myself and as well as some of the guys on our staff that when we go watch prospects or guys who have offers, whether that's football or basketball, baseball, whatever, you start to intensify your magnet or your microscope a little bit, right? You really put that player under an intense eye. And so I try to remind myself and our writers that, hey, these kids are just freshmen. In 2 years, they could be totally different looking. They could be playing a different position. So let's watch these guys and see what makes them special right now. But we got to kind of take it easy on making a judgment on them, a judgment call on whether or not we think they're SEC capable as a 9th grader. And so it's different. It's difficult. We're all adjusting to it, but it causes these kids to grow up faster. And I don't know. I don't know if that's good or bad. I think back to me as a 14-year-old freshman in high school, just there's no way I could handle that type of spotlight. But on the flip side, they're playing in big national tournaments. There's a lot of people watching them. They're used to that public eye now. So it's just a different age of recruiting, and we're all learning from it.
Jesse, the Blue Cross State High School Football Championships are moving to Chattanooga for 2 years. You raised the question, what about Neyland Stadium after that? You check with some folks about that. Based on what you wrote, it looks like that is a possibility.
It's a very, very big possibility, Jimmy, and it wasn't necessarily me who raised the question. It comes up every time there's a bid cycle for football, and it comes up on social media. People will see Cookeville getting it or Chattanooga getting it or Murfreesboro putting a bid, and it's always, well, why doesn't Knoxville put in a bid? Why isn't Neyland Stadium in the rotation or in the mix for this? And so I called a few people, and what I learned was back in March, in the months leading up to March when they the Board of Control awarded Chattanooga the championship, Knoxville was very, very interested in hosting the 2021 and 2022 Blue Cross Bowls, and more interested than I think people understand. They had months worth of conversations back and forth between themselves and the TSSAA, and I think in the end, Jimmy, the amount of things that they had going on from a sports commission and Visit Knoxville standpoint, and as well as all the leadership changes that have been going on over at Tennessee, it just wasn't a good time for the two parties to marry up and put forth a bid. But having talked with Chad Culver, and I quote him in that article, he said that over and over again, they want this event. And so when the bid cycle comes back open in 2023, I know that's 2 years away, but given the tone of his statements, I fully expect Knoxville to put forth a bid on hosting the state championships. Now, the conversation quickly turns, well, can they do that? 9 games, 3 days on a natural grass field. And so we talk about that in the article as well. We talked with Dr. John Sorachin from over at the University of Tennessee, who I think you've talked to probably in the past, Jimmy. And I talked to another field expert here in town just to see if this is a feasible thing. What are the pros and cons of it? What has to be done? What's the worst case scenario? And that'll be a point of contention in 2 years if Knoxville does put in a bid and the TSSAA Board of Control will have to consider that.
If my memory is off base, you tell me, but I think a lot of people thought Neyland Stadium would never do this. I shouldn't say never, would not do this, because it was a few years ago when Dave Hart was the AD at Tennessee. Tennessee did away with the high school jamborees, correct? They didn't really want them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and there was a time in the mid-2010s where I think the field was really struggling and not looking good. And so I think for this to happen, for Knoxville to put in a bid, I think there has to be 100% commitment from the city of Knoxville and 100% commitment from Tennessee. And I think a lot of that plays into Josh Heupel's court, too. What's he want this field to look like in December and January and February, where recruits might be making visits on campus? If the field gets torn up because of the game, that means that money needs to be allocated or budgeted aside for possible field replacement and sodding, resodding. That could cost $100,000 to $200,000. But Tennessee has that money, right? If they want kids from the mid-state and West Tennessee, Memphis area to get re-engaged and feel like Tennessee is a cool place again, then they need those kids on campus. And the easiest way to do that for those marquee talents is to have the state championships there.
Do you think there would be a chance to have the Jamborees back in the picture as well, or is that another conversation?
I'd hope so. I think it's a different conversation. I think one that we'll be having here in the next couple of months. Really, I think with this year, it's going to be from a standpoint of how comfortable do they feel or with what's going on with COVID. Can we put people in the stands again in high school and feel like they're going to do what they need to do on their part to keep everything safe? And again, I don't know what the regulations, public regulations will be at that point in August, but when I put out that article about the state championships, there were a number of people who commented on Twitter or Facebook that said, I played a Jamboree game there when I was in high school, and it was one of the greatest moments of my high school career. Not every kid is going to get to play in state championship games or playoff games, but if they can play a Jamboree at Neyland Stadium, that can supersede that 2-8 season that they might have, or that 3-7 season they might have. And to know that they ran out onto that field for 8 to 10 minutes and got to play a few snaps, I mean, that goes a long way in a high school kid's life.
Among the things that you guys have that folks can access through your website, what about the middle school basketball all-star games that have taken place this week?
Yeah, so we like to do as good a job as we can into dipping into those waters and see the next talent that's coming up into high school. And this was an event that was supposed to be held a couple of weeks ago, but back when we had all the flooding and there were a lot of road condition issues, and they had to postpone it and move it into this week. And so we got to go out to Catholic High School on Wednesday night and start to see some of the better eighth grade basketball talent that'll be in high school next year. And it looks promising, guys. I mean, not only are are some of the players that we saw, also football players, but they're really good basketball players as well. And again, with all the 7-on-7 and AAU tournaments that these kids play in, they're so ready physically and mentally when they come into high school to withstand that spotlight and that pressure, that it's really impressive what they're able to do. And they're growing up in an age where self cameras are on them and on their games every single time out, just in case some kid dunks or gets crossed over and he falls down and gets embarrassed. I mean, they're used to the spotlight, and it doesn't bother them. So it's kind of a unique time to watch teenagers coming into high school.
What all are you guys covering this weekend, Jesse?
So we got some soccer on the docket tonight. We got some softball. We got some spring football practice coverage that'll be posted on the site probably later tonight or maybe this weekend. We're also still working on our all five-star preps basketball teams. We've kind of had to put those on pause because of the Neyland Stadium story we put out. We're still kind of tracking the Catholic football job and kind of what's going on with that. And that's a daily grind. It's going in a lot of different directions. And so we're putting forth a lot of effort on that front. And so we got a lot of irons in the fire and a lot of great coverage coming on the site very, very soon.
And that's all at fivestarpreps.com. Jesse, thank you so much. Good luck with everything this weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.
All right. Appreciate it, guys, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Jesse Smithy of fivestarpreps.com joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with the final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk, which today is at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue.
And we're on location with Scott Gropp, and it is a stimulus package sales event. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How you doing, buddy?
Are you stimulating these clients?
I'm telling you, it's been stimulation motors. You know, we had we had our record breaker last month, 332 cars. And we are April, which is only a 29-day selling month because it's 30 days minus Easter, so 29 days. And we are tracking about the same number, which is absolute pandemonium. And we just passing the stimulus on to, the customers. And so it's working, and you can get up to $2,800 worth of stimulus right here on your brand-new Oak Ridge Nissan. It's been crazy.
So that not only makes you the number one Nissan dealer in East Tennessee, but the entire state.
We've been number one in the state for the last couple years, and I'll tell you, we're just riding the wave. And I'll tell you, when you load up in the trades, you aren't worried about the mule going blind, just load the wagon. I tell you, people come out, you get up to $8,000 over Kelley Blue Book on a trade, selling the new Nissans for less, Nissan Altimas starting at $17,488. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, we're taking the meat off the bone and giving them half the bone, Jimmy. It's just been pandemonium.
How about this? 0% financing for up to 84 months.
Yeah, I mean, you can get free money for 84 months. There's so many ways to buy a car, and you know what's really exciting during stimulus motor sale, I'm telling you, people have been leaving here, a lot of them, with lower payments than when they got here on a brand new Oak Ridge Nissan. So you talk about a magic trick. Woo! wholesale to the public.
Well, more magic, no payments until October.
We can do that too. Wow. Actually, I can run them out till next year if they need it. You know, there's just, like I said, so many ways to buy a car. Folks, if you can hear the sound of my voice, you've been thinking, dreaming, wishing, hoping, praying for that brand new Oak Ridge Nissan. You make the 10-minute drive, you're going to save thousands of dollars during our stimulus sale, and you can keep the check.
Scott, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks,
thank
Jimmy. Make the drive.
Appreciate it. Scott Gropp.
With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We've got hour number two of Sports Talk coming up. It has been a huge week, and the news just continues to come in and be good for the Big Orange. And Rick Barnes, we look forward to recapping that with Al Brown as he joins us to start hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.